Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Frog Snacks Podcast. It is episode 196. It is I, Snacks. With me, as always, is my little co-host, Frog. Hello.
What's up?
If we sound slightly different, which we shouldn't, it's because we're attempting a new recording system here. Better late than never, I guess. A weird time to start a new system, but we're trying it out. Today's episode is going to be a pretty lighthearted one, but I think one that we have alluded to really since the episode one. I mean, we want to talk about four-player games, specifically games that are optimized for four players. And I think that our first episode ever, we talked, we had like a significant amount of time dedicated to what the future of co-op could look like. And I think it was fitting that at the time we were playing Borderlands, the pre-sequel. And just a few days ago, there were some rumors, some of them perpetuated by Gearbox themselves, that they have some big news to reveal later this month at PAX. And I think the general consensus is that it's probably going to be Borderlands 3. So I was thinking about we knew that we were going to do this topic for today, and I was thinking about Borderlands 3, and I was thinking to myself, the most amazing thing about co-op and the most amazing thing about four-player co-op is that the premise really has not changed in a very long time, and I don't believe demand has decreased whatsoever, despite the core functionality of it being essentially the same. Like, we're really not doing too much different in, say, like a hypothetical third Borderlands game than we were doing in, you know, Diablo 2 or Dungeons and Dragons or the old like stand-up arcade TMNT games or like Gauntlet or any of these types of games, right?
Man, Gauntlet. Woo.
Yeah, man, Gauntlet. So we're this is what's so interesting to me is that, you know, we're despite how quickly things seem to evolve and change in gaming, the concept of like four-player co-op really is like steadfastly in the like spear tip of why people like to game in the first place. And, you know, none of it needs to be altered so radically. Like, the skeleton of what four-player co-op entails does not have to be radically altered at all in order for people to remain interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, four-player games take, at least in my mind, three different forms. So you're kind of alluding to the, like, Borderlands model, right? The get four people together and go on this massive adventure, which is probably my favorite because you can do it over a long period of time, et cetera, et cetera. But then you also have get four people together and compete against other people, which is also great. You know, team cohesion, da-da-da-da, but you also get to get, you know, flex your competitive muscle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the four-player free-for-all, which is more in the local realm of things, right? So, you know, all the N64, all the Nintendo diehards like you and I, this is, you know, where we've cut our teeth on many an afternoon, you know, with people gather around the TV, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to hit all of these to some degree.
Yeah, we should.
But Borderlands, I think, is a great place to start. One, because we're expecting that in a week and a half or so, we're going to, PAX is that close already. Anyway, we're about to hear about what I'm sure is going to be a pretty freaking epic sequel. We might as well take just a brief minute to speculate, right? Because I think that would be relevant as well anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expecting that Borderlands 3 is going to be a mammoth game. I mean, Borderlands 2 was a mammoth game, right?
Yeah.
Not just in terms of like impact. I'm talking about the actual game.
Yeah.
Borderlands 2, by the end of it, was a pretty meaty piece of work. And even with as much as Gearbox did, people were still clamoring for more. And I get it, because I was one of those people, right?
Yeah.
They made something that even now is still really not seen, which is you had a pretty deep and involving four-player game that was also hilarious and inviting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's so easy to forget how funny the writing in Borderlands was, the whole series. But yeah, funny, inviting. They brought back cel shading, famously.
Yes.
Licensed music, just like
I like me now.
Tons of replayability, you know, and
yep.
Geared perfectly for four players. I mean, they aped the Diablo system, but whatever. It was.
I mean, if you're gonna ape the Diablo system, you have to do it right, and they did it extremely right.
Yes, yes, and it felt different enough from Diablo, where I was like, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, go from one to the other and be like, hey, what's going on here?
Right. This is it. They took the skeleton of Diablo and built a new body on it.
Yes.
Yeah, Borderlands. I'm expecting. You mentioned to me that you're expecting a battle royale mode in this game. Possibly, but I'm not sure that would really fit the MO of the franchise, because this is at its core a cooperative game. I mean, they may decide, hey, we want to throw PvP in this thing, especially, I mean, Gearbox is a shooter developer, so the idea that they would have a PvP section is certainly not out of the question. But I'm actually betting that this game is going to, and this is why the game industry is so interesting. So check this out. Borderlands 2 came out and kind of, I wouldn't say revolutionized, but it definitely made huge waves in the industry, showing that there was a market for these kind of online, meaty, four-player experiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was kind of the one of the first children of Borderlands? Destiny. And Destiny basically said, all right, I'll take the Borderlands skeleton, which is itself, you know, the Diablo skeleton with a bunch of shit on it, and we're going to take it a step further and turn this whole thing into a light MMO, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a feeling that what's going to happen now is, you know, the father, Borderlands, saying, all right, I see you, and we'll raise you whatever they have cooked up. But I'm betting that the direction this is going to go in is in the Destiny direction, where this is going to be, they're going to go for some level of persistence and, you know, making this really a platform to just keep doing stuff over time. Again, especially given that with Borderlands 2, people literally could not get enough.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I don't know if we're going to get into, like, MMO light territory. And the Battle Royale thing is mostly just, like, they're going to put it in on the side, on, like, the off chance that it blows up, because I think that what they want to do, and this kind of goes in hand with what you were saying, is that, like, you know, it's all going to be a platform. Like, they want this to be like a Borderlands amusement park, essentially, right? You want there to be everything to do, and so why not make, you know, why not make a VR mode? You already have, like, a big map. You've already got, like, a pretty killer randomized weapon system, with upgrades and everything, and you know, elemental damage and everything. You just randomize that stuff. You spread it all out onto a fixed static map, and, you know, offer it. I'm not saying that Borderlands 3 is going to be a Borderlands battle royale. I'm saying that they're going to, like, throw it in on the side. I think that you're probably right, that it is going to just be this big platform where they can keep adding, you know, community bosses, like, a la Monster Hunter, where they're like, you know, you got this dungeon here, you know, run this dungeon. I think it's going to look more like sort of an amalgam, you know, of what Borderlands has been up to this point, but with a lot of the modern trappings of what you would expect out of like a four-player co-op game without like fully diving in headfirst into MMO territory.
Yeah, I mean, all remains to be seen, but yeah, everything you say makes sense, you know? I was thinking while you were saying that too is, well, if they're going to do a battle royale mode, they'd have to have some kind of hook, right? Because then otherwise it's just a me too of all the stuff that's out there.
Yep.
Like Apex Legends' big hook was having much tighter shooting mechanics and an array of quality of life improvements, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if they double down on the idea of it being like a hero shooter. And this brings me back now to the other thing, which I'm waiting to see if they do, which is we neatly skipped over a game that you and I played that Gearbox did in between Borderlands 2 and now, which was, of course, Battleborn.
Right.
Now, Battleborn, as a co-op experience, was pretty fun. I think we had our, you know, decent time with it, right?
Yeah.
Clearly trying to get in on the MOBA market at the time with their kind of own spin on it. Now, I wonder if they pull a, and this is something I've written about in our blog, right? I wonder if they're going to pull a Capcom and take all the assets from this failed game and incorporate them into the guaranteed success that will be Borderlands 3. So what if you have the situation where the 20 whatever characters they cooked up for Battleborn end up being heroes that you can pick to participate in a battle royale mode a la Apex Legends? That could be interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, they could even
just dump the entire Battleborn feature set into Borderlands' as other modes, if like to your point, so.
Yeah, and they don't even have to limit themselves in the story mode in the same way that they've done previously, too. Like, you know, there has been, up to this point, only four characters to use in the story mode. They could make that more, right?
You already have all these characters done, and already since they were following with Battleborn, they were following, like, the MOBA template, right? You know, that in itself is already very close to the Diablo style. So it probably would not take a lot of tweaking to get those characters ready for a long-scale campaign in a game like Borderlands.
Yeah.
And that would go a long way toward replayability, too.
Yeah, exactly. Because I always wanted to... The four characters were always so different, you know, that I always wanted to, you know, see what the whole thing was about. I mean, it's sort of the same, you know, it's sort of the whole Monster Hunter thing where each weapon feels like its own game.
Yep, exactly. And that's, I think, if they're really going to be ambitious, which I hope they are, that's the kind of thing I'd like to see them do with this game. And all this to say is that, I mean, Borderlands is hopefully going to do all this stuff, but I think what we're talking about is desirable in general if we think about the future of that template, right? You know, if Gearbox does not necessarily do all these things, somebody should and probably will.
Yeah.
Because if anything, in the time since Borderlands 2 has been out, as we said before, Destiny, The Division, you know, and would be Anthem anyway, are kind of all trying to take that position. Even though, curiously, and I still wonder why they were designed this way, all those games are tuned for 3, not 4. Which has always bothered me a little bit.
Yeah, and
like,
you know,
what made them decide to do that?
Well, I think this is a good segue into something. So, like, what is the appeal of 4, right? This whole episode is about 4-player games, and we've been talking about Borderlands and what made Borderlands fun and all the things that they could do to make the 4-player experience of Borderlands 3 more fun. And you just stated that like a lot of modern iterations of this scaled it down to 3, and it didn't ruin the game. These games are popular and fine and good, but you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, we're like the four players has always seemed like the logical maximum for cooperative games, especially on console, right?
Yeah.
And I think we need to now talk about why that is. You know, I think that this started with arcades. I think that, you know, four players was the most that they could, like, squeeze onto a cabinet in most cases for larger games.
Well, except for the infamous X-Men six-player arcade cabinet.
Right, of course.
That was cramped as balls.
But that was, it was cramped, but it was also, like, I think that was more gimmicky than anything else, depending on what year that one came out. I would have to check, but
think that's 91.
Yeah, so I think
that cabinet is crazy. I don't know if you've ever seen one.
I have seen them. They're yeah, it's huge, right? So, but the, like, all these, like, side-scrolling, you know, big cabinet arcade games, like your, you know, like your TMNTs and your Gauntlets, right? We're all four player, and then, you know, the N64 comes out, right? And it's got four controller ports. And this is sort of like
bombshell,
but also I think what really did it too was split screen, right? Like, if you're splitting a screen, it's a square, so, like, splitting it three ways never really looked right or felt right. So I think that I think that was part of it too. It was just like I said, like, the logical maximum for screen splitting. So, like, you had experimentation with, you know, four player and six player, but this was all same screen. And if you were going to make other games, like racing games, and you're going to make them four player, you know, how many arguments have you had about what's better? You know, horizontal or vertical split screen for two player. With four player, it's perfectly even. You know, everybody gets exactly 1/4 of the screen, and nothing gets compromised in terms of, like, aspect ratio and resolution. So, you know, this was sort of how it worked. And if you're going to do racing games where you can't have it all on the same screen, then, you know, that was what made the most sense. And then, you know, the Dreamcast had four controller ports, and the original Xbox had four controller ports, and it never really, that for a long time became, like, industry standard for, you know, max console co-op.
And, yeah, and you know, it's interesting.
I was just going to say, so, like, at a certain point, you optimize games to be that way. And I think that, you know, games like Mario Tennis, right? You got 2v2 doubles, right? You got Mario Kart Double Dash, 2v2, you know, with you could split that up, you know, you split duties up that way, even though nobody did that, but you could, right?
Right.
You know, they had Gauntlet 64. You know, so three players never really, you know, I mean, you can do it now, especially on PC when everything's online, and it could be, you know, it could be three players or it could be 40, like, you know, old school WoW raids, and it doesn't matter. But, you know, four players became shorthand for, like, couch co-op, right? It was insinuated in the phrasing. So games become, you know, maxed out that way. And you saw that with a lot of these, like, dungeon crawlers, you know, your Diablos and your Borderlands and, you know, one of my personal favorites for the PS2, Champions of Norrath, which required the multi-tap, but four-player Champions of Norrath was so much fun. And I don't know. I think that it's important that you understand the background when you talk about, like, a four-player game, right? We're talking about, you know, we're talking about a team, and we're talking about a legacy of games being, constructed around the notion of four players either working as a team or independently of one another competitively.
You know, the biggest thing that kind of mind blower that you said there that I didn't even think about before was just the straight logic of, okay, well, if we're going to split a screen, well, you can split into four quadrants, and that's going to be the logical endpoint. Not only in terms of screen real estate, but in terms of power. So we're talking about another four-player game. Now, again, since we're now in console realm, we're talking about things that are free-for-alls as well as just cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
GoldenEye.
Of course.
The OG of console shooters. A game which definitely, playing it today, you can see why it was a big deal, but you can also see how much they really forced the N64 to its absolute limit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because playing that game in four players, to be honest, I don't know how anybody did it, because the N64 is basically on fire for that entire duration.
Yeah.
Like, how could you do this to me, is what it's saying. How could you rupture my soul in this manner? Because that's how much it is struggling to keep pace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, many people played multiple hours of GoldenEye on any given session.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. The point is that they found a way to make that happen. And between them and, you know, the various other Nintendo classics we'll touch on in a moment, set a standard. And that's, I think, was such an interesting observation, that a standard was set that has carried through even to our online era.
Yeah. I mean, even look at the Xbox 360 controller. The home button had four quadrants to light up to let you know which player you were.
Yep.
Right?
I thought it was one of the best design touches.
No, it was great. You know, so yeah, this is the standard. So no, it's not an affront to God if you decide to do, you know, three player game anymore. But I do remember, you know, thinking like, oh, how weird would it be if someone came out with like an original Xbox game that was only up to three players? So, you know, and then like the whole party game format that started out with the N64 carried over into the Xbox original era too, with like Fusion Frenzy and stuff like that. And, you know, it wasn't up until, I don't know, maybe like Jackbox where it no longer mattered, what the player count was, but all those games were optimized for four players. So, and then like Overcooked, right? Like,
yeah.
Overcooked is optimized for four players to the point where if you play it with two, there's only so far in the game you can get before it becomes overwhelming.
Yeah, this is very true.
You know, and then one more thing. I don't know
how
much this has to do with this legacy and this standard, but 4v4 as like a standard for like console first person shooters, and hell, even PC first-person shooters, has been a thing and continues to be a thing. And I don't know if that's like a chicken or an egg sort of situation, but 4v4 has seemed to be like the arena shooter standard for regular Team Slayer.
Yeah, and it's – so before I go back to my point about Overcooked, I'll answer this one, right? So – one of the things I thought about earlier was this idea of player counts when you talk about shooter teams. And four really is a great number even in that environment. Five is good, but four I think is pretty ideal. Like a good 4-on-4 is pretty ideal, where everybody will get a chance to do something and it's not going to be too overwhelming. It's very interesting to see, like over the years having played a bunch of different shooters and seeing different player counts in, you know, every given game, it's very interesting to see how even you know, adding or removing one or two people from a match can completely throw the balance off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So having a 5v5 feels way different and way more chaotic than having a 4v4. It's a very simple difference, but it makes a world of difference on the ground in reality. So that's just kind of an interesting thing to note. But I guess it does kind of dovetail with in a different manner with the Overcooked conversation. As you said, a local game optimized for four. And in fact, what we've seen now, and I think Overcooked is a great example of this, is these indie games that now have taken four-player games to the next level. You know, setting out from the get... Like, obviously Nintendo, when they did the N64, said, this is going to be our thing. We want to have four-player games. But I feel like there's a level of people doing it in like this artistic manner now, for lack of a better word. Like they're trying to elevate the format of the four-player couch co-op or couch competitive game.
Mm-hmm.
So you have things like Overcooked. The game like Towerfall, for example, is another one. You know, you have like Samurai Gun. Even though it's only a two-player game, it's a great one for people to get involved. Something like Nidhogg, right? Like all these couch games.
Sure.
When you throw multiple people at them, become just like they sing. If that makes sense.
Yeah. No. That makes total sense. The concept hasn't lost. I don't think that anybody's abandoned the concept. Is sort of the point that we're trying to make. You know that.
Oh, not at all.
That, you know, it's. I don't see anybody, you know, willfully trying to upset the equilibrium of four player co-op, whether online or otherwise. I think that people are now realizing that there are other ways to accomplish co-op that don't have to involve three people, and that's fine. Like I said, you know, it's not an affront to God, but you know, we've you know, evolved so much with four as being the like a manageable amount of people,
right.
where it now is just like, you know, let's keep doing it because it's fine, you know. I mean, look at like I just keep thinking of more games like I don't know, like Castle Crashers, right? Was so much fun with four players. Little Big Planet was great with four players. You know, I'm doing you a disservice by just sitting here and listing games that were fun with four players because it's so many of them. But my point is that, like, yeah, the indie space is a great way to build on it because you can, because the foundation of why four is the best number is already built. So you can say, like, okay, it's a four-player game and nobody, like, throws you out of the board meeting, you know?
Right.
They're like, four? Just kick you out of the window. Like that. Like that meme where the guy's like suggesting something at the meeting and he gets thrown out the window.
Right.
You know, it's not like that. You know, you can build on the foundation of four and it's fine. So yeah, the indie space has done a pretty upstanding job of building on that standard of four players and will continue to do so in the future.
Yeah. It's good. Indie games continue to be interesting for a host of reasons, but one of the things I'm most glad about is that they continue the legacy of couch co-op and you know, couch competitive in general. Given that, you know, we're obviously in this hyper online first, I should say, era. I mean, even I think of fighting games and it really, they're being designed kind of online first at this point. So, you know, the fact that they can do that is going to be great. So why don't we think a little more about kind of going back to earlier part of the conversation about the four players on a team in a competitive game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have plenty of this. And as I alluded to before, four is kind of that sweet spot number. Five and above is a bit chaotic. Well, five is a bit chaotic, and everything above five is pure chaos.
Yeah.
But four, I think four on four is a pretty good tactical sweet spot. Like, that's where you can really get a group of people and work strategies where everybody has to contribute, but it's not too overwhelming. So most shooters kind of follow this template, but this is where we can talk about another granddaddy. We mentioned GoldenEye earlier, but let's mention the other granddaddy of console shooters, Halo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can dovetail with a little bit of news because we knew, finally, and this is actually one of the few times where Tea Leaves or Frog, we got a definitive answer on, didn't we?
Yeah.
So we found out yesterday that the Master Chief Collection is coming to PC, thus sending me all the way over the moon.
Yeah.
It was a long flight back to Earth for me. You know, I got back safely, sort of. But Master Chief Collection is finally coming over. And among many reasons why I'm excited for this is because this is one of my personal first experiences with kind of getting, you know, your buddies together on a team and going to test your mettle against, you know, other groups of friends and whatever on the internet, right? How many times have you, me, sometimes even Dingus, and some of our other friends gotten together and really just made a go of it in matches of Halo? It's a different experience than the experience of, you know, just us four cooperating towards some goal, like, let's say, Monster Hunter, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a straight competitive experience, but doing that as a team, I think, kind of flexes a different set of intellectual muscles, if you will. Like, we really have to coordinate, because you're going against humans now, right? So you really have to coordinate in a very specific fashion. And when you do it right, there really is nothing like it.
Right. So, okay, let's bring up two things. One, you had mentioned, briefly, you had brought up Overwatch, right? And Overwatch is 6v6. Now, unless you're playing at, you know, the highest level of multiplayer,
mm-hmm.
You have no control over your team. None. Even if you're playing with a couple of your friends, like, let's say you get like two or three friends and, you know, three or four out of the six is you and your buddies, that is not enough. You need 100% of the people on your team, A, knowing what they're doing, and B, being able to, if not just flat out listen to instructions and be able to do them, like, be able to understand the flow of what the rest of the team is trying to do and keep up. And that's a pretty big ask for any shooter, but especially one where there are five other teammates. So it is interesting that they went for a 6v6 format. I think that it's just the right amount of chaotic, but it's also very frustrating for, you know, your four-star general types who really want to try to, you know, flex their strategic muscles, because you can't corral five other people in there unless you're all on mic together. You all know exactly what to do. And I think it's created too much. And this ultimately has to do with character balance, but I think, just to save face in the, you know, and it, just to save face in the realm of trying to, you know, corral all six people doing the same thing, you've ended up with like a pretty predictable meta. And with With four, though, you really can, you know, it's sort of like the difference between, like, it's sort of like the difference between, like, basketball and football, right? Like, right. There's 11 people on a side in football in any given play. 11. And there's 5 in basketball. And we're talking about a larger map size, you know, in football. They're on a big team battle map. And a basketball court is much smaller. But yep. If you watch enough basketball, you start to see the same kind of like – this is going to be a long-winded parallel. But essentially what you're seeing in basketball is kind of like akin to like a 4v4 arena shooter. And football is more like like an Overwatch type thing. But in basketball, if you watch enough basketball, what you see is like the positions are essentially numbered 1 through 5. And there are some people who are so wedded to their position that they have like these unbelievably like lopsided statistics. Like Anthony Davis, who's like one of the best power forwards in the league, one of my personal favorite players, has like attempted, I think, like less than 5 3-point shots in his entire career.
Wow.
So, but you're also talking about like one of the league leaders in scoring. So you're talking about like, this is like, I don't know, for an example, right? Like the person who like beelines for the rocket launcher every single time and is so good with it that nobody says a peep. They're like, okay, yeah, Anthony Davis, you can have the rocket launcher again. It's fine. You know, go for it. You know, so you start to see a lot of stuff like that. And if you have one of the five that's so good that they can like do stuff like that and the other team sort of like, you know, works around that player, then that's a lot easier. And that person can carry the team a lot easier than they can with like football, right? Like there's, you know, you have, you know, generational talents, of course, but like nobody's carrying the team like they can in a 5v5 game, like basketball. And you can more deftly move around that player and allow that player to do that thing that is the most valuable thing that they do. So, you know, with a four person shooter, with a 4v4 arena shooter, you can more realistically do stuff like that. You can allow a person to control the same hallway. You know, like in the pit in Halo 3, right? There was that hallway with the rocket launcher right in the middle, and half like each match would immediately start with like a 2v2 skirmish with two people on either side of that tunnel, just trying to fight for superiority for it so they can get the rocket launcher or whatever. And some people would just like put like some really well-placed grenade and it would like just launch it to their side, but you would have to do it so perfectly. But like, you know, stuff like that, you can allow people to work to their strengths a little bit more. And then with football, like, I mean, there's 11 people, right? And there's one of my favorite gifts from last season, or it might've been 2 seasons ago, but there was a quarterback for the Miami Dolphins named Jay Cutler. Right. And Jay Cutler is kind of like, nobody gives less of a shit about his job than Jay Cutler. Like he just doesn't care. Like you could tell he like retired from football in his head like 3 years ago and he just like doesn't give a shit. And there's this great gif where they do a, they snap to the running back instead of the quarterback. Right. So the way that they do it is like to confuse the defense. They sort of like line up differently. So like nobody's directly behind the center. Somebody moves in front, like last minute, grabs the football and then starts the play. So that they showed the play and the gif is basically just Jay Cutler standing slightly off to the side and then the snap happens and he just continues to stand there. Like he doesn't even bother like moving as a unit with the team. Like he's just there. Like he might as well have had a lit cigarette in his mouth. Like he was so checked out. It was hilarious. And you when you get to team sizes larger than four, you start to see some of that. You start to see some people sort of like breaking from the herd a little bit, but not in a way that's beneficial. You know, people's roles are so rigid play to play that, you know, there's only one football and there's 11 people. There's 22 people on the field, right? And there's right. and there's one football. The ball is only going to go one way. Right. And so you have basically like a very high level guessing game as to where the ball is going to go and what all of the people should do who are going to be near where you think the ball is going to go should do. And then you have literally 18 other people just like making noise as they might as well have like sparklers and just should be running in circles like some of the time. So it's, you know, you get a lot of like dead space almost. And especially with Overwatch, when you have like the car, right, you got to like move the payload, right? There's one point, that's the football, right? And you, yep. It's on a track, so you know where it's going to go, but there's so much extra space out there. You know, you have the whole map and you have all these people who like don't really belong on the payload. Like if you're Widowmaker or whatever, like you're going to be off doing your own shit. Like you're just like Jay Cutlering, you know, your way through the match. And like, obviously, you know, you get to higher levels, you have like a Widowmaker who's making like a world of difference, you know, they're really, really talented, but I don't know. I think that management, space management, you know, point control, territory, control, you know, all that stuff is, you know, way more manageable when you scale it down to four people. You know, I mean, with the exception of maybe like a battlefield where it's like, you know, 32 versus 32 or 24 versus 24 or whatever, but the map's so big and these points are numerous, right? They're spread out over this. So the whole thing is territory control. So it doesn't matter. It could be 100 versus 100. It doesn't matter as long as there's, you know, a relative number of points that you need to capture. But in just an arena shooter, four is, like I said over and over, I think it's the most manageable number. I mean, the maps are built for it.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I think that the way you laid that was really good. Overwatch is kind of a different beast entirely, which is why its game modes are designed the way they are. But yes, I think your core point is totally right, where four players per team on a shooter really is, to me, the ideal. Now, with all this high-flying talk about teamwork and roles, it has to be said that one of the things we always have made fun of in this age of the, you know, four-player team arena shooter is the fact that you have, it's totally possible to lone wolf the whole thing, right? So we say that, like, Halo, for example, is a team game in the loosest sense of the word, right? Because it is totally possible if, you know, you, me, and two of our other friends get together and play Halo, and if you are the strongest performer, you can completely say, I literally do not even have to know what the rest of my team is doing because I'm putting the team on my back though.
Thank you.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, which is part of the reason, as a sidebar, why I think the age of Overwatch has been so jarring for a lot of people, because here comes a game, again, off of the MOBA template that says, okay, guys, 6v6 shooter, you've seen that before. What you haven't seen before is a 6v6 shooter where everybody has to triple underline work as a team. If somebody does not carry their weight in that six-person team, it's over. Period. Full stop. So, you know, it's a totally different beast. But if I can broaden this picture a little bit, why I think Halo is a great multiplayer game in general is because it offers, and again, this is not only Halo, but I think Halo does this arguably the best, because it offers a little bit of everything. So you have of course, is classic 4v4 Team Slayer. You also have Big Team Battle, where you can get into pure chaos with more than four players, right? But you also have a campaign mode. The campaign modes in Halo, many people come just for that, right?
Yep.
And those have been four-player co-op for a very long time and are always tremendous fun to do multiple times because thanks to the skull system, you can play different difficulties and put different modifiers on and really mess with experience in a whole, you know, whole slew of different ways. And in Reach and ODST, you had the Horde mode Firefight, which is one of my personal favorites.
Oh, so much fun.
Firefight is the best. The fact that I will be able to play Firefight again on a modern machine is a reason enough for me. Damn, I'm already about to go to the moon again. I'm blowing the spaceship right now, man. You don't even realize.
The man is happy.
I am happy. Shit. Are you kidding me? This is going to be insane. What?
No,
and especially because, think about this too. You know, because one of the things that has been foundational to the DNA of Halo is LAN. Something that has largely died, but I think they're going to go the extra mile and make sure that the LAN options are going to be on point for this.
Mm-hmm.
What makes this whole project so unique is that, yeah, they're putting a bunch of old games out, but in particular, one of those old games, Halo 1, is, again, the granddaddy of console shooters, and arguably because of that, all the shooters that we have today.
Yeah, I mean, it's like having being able to finally own a physical copy of like a work of Shakespeare, right? Like on your bookshelf, like
right.
just being able to have the digital copy on your machine, you know, just there in the, you know, in the most like up-spec'd way it can be appreciated is a big deal.
Yeah, we're basically, what I'm saying is that we're going to have, to your point, living history.
Yeah,
you know,
yes,
the granddaddy will be back, and it'll be in a way that everybody can properly experience. So the LAN parties are going to be, you know, we have our own plans that we're cooking up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it would appear that our plans are very timely. So. Yeah, but that was a giant digression. All the point I was simply making was that Halo does offer something to pretty much every kind of four-player group. You know, whether you want to compete against other people, compete against a computer, or just, you know, see a epic story. They kind of covered the gamut. And I think that really is emblematic of where we're at with these online four-player games in general. Which is why it's so fun.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Yeah. So what do you think? You got a. What's up?
We should briefly touch on, because we didn't even talk about some of the specific Nintendo games that some of the specific Nintendo titles that have made it the four player king.
Yeah.
Most notably, we don't have to go into a crazy amount of depth because everybody, A, knows all these, and B, we've talked about them in, all of them in depth at some point or the other, but we should give shouts out to, you know, think games like Smash Brothers. Smash Brothers by itself, you know, legitimizes the idea of four people in a room playing a game.
Well, here's the other thing, right? So when Brawl comes out, right? The whole point that I was trying to make earlier about split screen doesn't apply for Smash,
yep.
Right? So they were immediately like, yo, it literally doesn't matter. Eight, whatever. And they allowed you to do eight. So, like, I think that, yeah, Smash, like, you know, Smash is like
a, Smash 4.
Smash is a unique beast. Oh, was it four that they upped it to eight?
Yeah.
You know, Smash is a unique beast in that it can be, you know, it's especially when they, you know, upscaled a couple of the maps for size relative to how many players they were going to have, you know, that you could do up to eight and it was fine. But, you know, for a long time, it was like four player, just it was a four player, just beat 'em up, but beat each other up. And like, that was really cool. And I loved that. Obviously, and it's still
there. Yeah, Smash is, for that same reason, you get all the glory of four-player gaming without the compromise of split-screen. Though I have to say, split-screen gaming was perhaps 20 or so years ahead of its time. It's real time, I would say. Because now we live in an age where everybody has a huge TV.
Yes.
You know, and dudes aren't sitting there squinting at their, you know, their five-inch quadrant of the TV.
Yeah.
Running at 10 frames per second.
Listen, man. I was doing split screen co-op on our family's, like, you know, TV number two, which was like the like 16 inch Magnavox with the wood paneling. Whoa. Forever, man. Forever. So yeah, I mean, like, we're, you know, it's unfortunate that that we had to cut up an already abysmally small and shitty screen, but you know, if the TV technology had, you know, been like bumped up 10 years earlier, then the prospect of split screen would have been much more palatable, I think. But yeah, now everybody's got a big TV and it's all crystal clear and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so even playing old games, you know, like emulated old games or whatever, on split screen is so much better than back in the day.
Oh, but yeah, you know, we're playing, you know, just playing like F-Zero on your TV is like, you know, it's a breeze. There's no scaling down of the experience there.
No, by no means. F-Zero is another great four player game.
Mm-hmm.
If you want your eyes to bleed, of course. but in the same vein as Smash Brothers not split up the screen, Mario Tennis, you mentioned earlier, is a great one. And I think that game also is a great argument for why four players is great for the format, because it's just enough so that you can have 2v2, like just enough to have what you can call a team versus team battle.
Right, exactly. And that's how actual tennis is. They didn't come up with some like weird Mario rules for that. Like that's right. Literally how doubles works. It's 2v2. Right. So yeah, I think Mario Tennis is a great one. You know, all the racing games, like we mentioned F-Zero and Mario Kart, obviously, but all the racing games, 4v4 split screen is great, especially ones with, you know, especially the cart style ones that have, you know, items and all that other foolishness. There's nothing like doing a thing in Mario Kart that messes the person next to you up. It's really just, it's special. And then I also do want to, bring up one last game before we just fall into the rabbit hole of just like naming good four player games. But I did want to bring up Power Stone.
Oh yeah.
Just because it is a favorite, but also there's really no other way to play it. I mean, to the point where if you have three people, it just gives you a fourth computer because it's perfect with four players. And like having gotten the chance to play it, four-player couch co-op is I'm thankful for having gotten the opportunity to do it on multiple occasions. Power Stone 2 for the Dreamcast was a treat, and they need to bring that shit back. I don't know who's in charge of the Power Stone IP. I don't know if it's still Capcom or what, but like, please do me a favor.
It's very much still Capcom.
Do me a favor.
These Dreamcast era gems that Capcom has that they have not put back out, and I'm really just waiting for them to do. Like, they did the Power Stone collection for PSP, but that was literally it. And PSP is like the weirdest possible platform to have that on.
I know. Ugh.
Like they should have put that out on like any Nintendo platform for one thing, you know. But you know, again, that's neither here nor there. But yes, I think that was a pretty good pretty good set of four-player games we went through. And I really do think there's going to be a lot more of that in the future. The future of multiplayer in general is going to be really, really fascinating. Between what Battle Royale has brought to the table, what the continued evolution of these arena-style shooters brings to the table, the bringing back of things like, you know, classic Halo. It just goes to reinforce the point we've made earlier, which is that this really is that this era of pluralism where everything and everybody will have a space somewhere. How big that space is another story, but there will be room for everybody.
Yeah, that's a good mantra of the podcast is there's room for everybody. That was a good hard look at the history of four player games, the past, present, and future of four player games. It's looking pretty bright, as we laid out. There's always cool stuff going out there. But that's all the time that we have for today's episode. If you want to throw in your two cents, if you want to chime in on the discussion, please, we encourage it. We are on the internet at Frogsnacks on Twitter, at Frogsnacks Podcast on Instagram. We've got our website, frogsnacks.net, and we are on wherever you get your favorite podcast. So rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you may get it. And we will talk to all people next week.
Peace out.
Peace.